Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grunes. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And today, as we go into the weekend with the Lakers on a 5-game winning streak, starting a 5-game road trip that will begin in Atlanta on Saturday, we take some of your questions at the beginning of this season. And D, I want to start in the present tense and then get to some of the, we have a moratorium here on, you know, too much trade talk until 12:15, but obviously there's a certain amount of, oh, look at this team. I wonder what it needs to add that we'll get to for sure. But I want to start with where the team is at right now. First question comes from Sean, asks, what do you contribute to the vibe seeming to be so good on this team? It seems to be more than just simply winning. Right players, right time. Even this time last year, early in the season, when they were doing good and winning, they almost seemed like they hated playing.
This is an interesting question, because as you were reading, I was just like, well, winning helps. And then the question is basically just like, it seems like it's more than just winning. And I would agree with that. I will say sometimes it's just the right mix of dudes. I thought that in 2020. Honestly, where it just seemed like the right mix of guys, and they seemed to fit together from a personality perspective and a common goal perspective. What can often create good vibes, from what I've seen, is when you have a singular player who just looks amazing the way that Luka does when he's been playing, and even Austin. It can really sort of galvanize the group in a way towards like inspiring belief. And to me, belief is one of the things that always leads to good vibes as well. Is like, do you think you can actually do something? And does that align with the group? There seems to be a lot of common goal stuff with this group, in that the championship or coming here to prove something, to win something, is an underlying factor with several of the free agents. Ayton mentioned this. Smart mentioned this. Then when you have that backed with Luka, I would tend to lean towards that stuff. But I'm wondering what you think about this.
I agree with just about everything you said there. I want to take a slightly different and perhaps obvious angle, but worth noting, is that the engines of this team are all in their mid-20s, all in the prime of their career. And if it seemed like the last couple of years, LeBron and AD teams have seemed like the regular season could be a bit of a drag, is because it is. We've heard LeBron openly acknowledge this about the regular season at this point. This is true of players as they get into their 30s. Is Darvin's infamous marathon quote is correct, that it is a marathon. It is a very long season. It's hard to do it year after year after year. And the stakes from a night-to-night basis are there, but they're not super high, right? You've got 8 teams that make the playoffs in your conference, 10 that make at least a version of the postseason, that you have a chance if you, your season doesn't go the way that you wanted it to still get in, that, yeah, there becomes a certain night-to-night basis, D, that it's harder for guys as they get older to be the engines that. Engines of this team are like 27 years old plus Marcus Smart.
At the beginning of the last two seasons, I would argue the group knew, maybe even three seasons, the group knew that when they started the year, that was very much not likely to be the same group that was going to finish the year. And there was that undercurrent of who of us will be gone by the time we get to the trade deadline. Last year, it was D'Lo. In the year before that, there was like some D'Lo vibes there then too. The year before that, it was the Russ stuff. And to me, Pete, it's no coincidence that after those trades were made, and the team sort of crystallized into this is the version of the team that we're going to be, the vibes markedly improved from that point on.
Great point.
The year that they made the Russ trade, they made a run all of the way to the Western Conference Finals, not just on vibes, obviously, but didn't hurt that the vibes were a lot better. And I would argue last year after the D'Lo trade, and then even though I think that many of the remaining players were sad to see Anthony Davis go, I also think that when they got Luka and the team was playing as well as they were playing even without Luka, that it felt like we can do something with this group. Look how good we are. And like I said, man, belief is a huge driver of the general mood and enthusiasm on a day-to-day basis. And then to add what you just said, and we're in our 20s, and we're all ready to go.
And we're in year two of the same coach and the same system and all of that, same language. There's, you know, some of the fruits of continuity show up. And it's one of those things that it's very chicken or the egg and self-reinforcing, where good basketball begets winning, which begets good vibes, which begets more good basketball and more winning. Yeah. You know, that's exactly part of the reason why you keep pushing through and really focus on doing the work, is because basketball is such a great game of runs and momentum that's one of the things. You're almost like trying to start a fire. You know, you're like conjuring all of the wind that you can and all of the friction to be able to get a fire going, because once it starts, it can really spread, and that can go in both a positive and negative direction. So let's look back just for a moment. There are a couple of perspectives here that I think are both very much valid, but a little bit in opposition to each other. First one comes from Jay. Why were they so low on the Lakers this summer after getting Smart, Laravia, and Ayton, while only losing DFS, making us 7 deep with 3 stars? When last season we were a 50-win contender with Bron, Luka, or AR, or Rui carrying, we were destined to be an offensive juggernaut no matter what. They went 18-10 with Luka in the lineup, 19-13 against teams with the top 10 point differential for cleaning the glass, including an incredible 12-4 run after the Luka trade. Offensive rating of number 10 and number 14. Absolute contender considering the upgrades, right? That's perspective number one. Then Joe says, big fan of the pod. I think that many of us, fans and analysts, agreed that the Lakers had some glaring warts that created significant doubt about them being a true title contender. Specifically, lack of on-ball and perimeter defense, lack of true two-way players compared to the top contenders, and lack of strong center play. I know the Lakers are off to a good start, but it's only been 9 games, and they've only beat one real title contender, the Wolves. I view this great start as an indicator that the Lakers' floor is higher than we thought, but we do not yet have compelling proof that the Lakers' ceiling is higher than we thought in terms of title contention, based on those 3 glaring warts mentioned above still haven't been fully fixed. Do you agree?
Where are you at with this? I have a fairly cynical answer to the first one, and the second one, I'd love to hear your thoughts first.
You know, there are a couple of things that go into the first one. Is one, we got our asses whipped in the playoffs fairly handily. That, yes, they made upgrades. All of those upgrades came with questions, for sure, with Ayton. Ayton has not left anywhere yet where they've been like, we sure are glad we had him around right now. I think it's entirely different circumstances right now. That's part of, to Sean's question, the first time, the right players, right time. I can't speak to who Ayton was on a day-to-day basis, but if this is the guy that he continues to be, I think that, you know, the Lakers are in good shape going forward. However, the points about the offense and all of that. It's like, yeah, that's why I was obsessed with this over the course of the offseason, was this team has a chance to be truly great on the offensive end. That I think that there can be, especially with the Lakers, a very glass half empty sort of approach and of what they are not, that we'll address the second part with Joe, that is not entirely invalid, of course. Again, they got whooped in the first round last year, and until they prove that, I think there's going to be a certain level of skepticism. But even on a team like the 2020 team that was steamrolling everybody, there was a great degree of, like, I don't know, greatest eighth seed of all time, those Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, and that sort of lines into the point I was going to make. I can have a fairly cynical response to the first question, which is, I don't think the Lakers get a lot of benefit of the doubt nationally, because nationally it is viewed that the Lakers generally get a lot of benefit of the doubt, if that makes sense, right? And so I don't think the media will always understand that they help shape narratives rather than always just trying to respond to them. And I think the Lakers are one of the bigger examples of that in sports media, from the amount that I follow across various sports. I can't recall a team that has won a championship in the last 5 years, been to a conference finals another time, has been in the playoffs, but obviously maybe has not had as much regular season success as they would have liked to have had, but is viewed through the context of, well, I don't trust them, sort of idea, particularly a team that's been led by LeBron James and Anthony Davis, two players who have universally been viewed as some of the better players of their respective generations. I think that's less true for AD as he's aged, but through the season that they got him, he was still viewed as just like, no, this guy's a perennial all-NBA player. And so the lack of benefit of the doubt for the Lakers is something that I think is a through line for a lot of national media folks. And I think it's often pushback against the perspective of they're the favorite son, mm-hmm. and that they're like the America's team, sort of, oh, they're the Lakers, they're so glamorous.
The Lakers get an inordinate amount of attention as well, which builds a lot of resentment. And it can be easy to conflate that attention with, like, oh no, everybody likes the, it's like, no, it's actually bad to be in the spotlight of these people in the way that the Lakers are.
Whether it's conscious or subconscious, sometimes, like, this internal pushback, like this battle between, like, are we being too generous to them versus are we being too firm on them? And I don't think anyone's ever answered, we're being too hard on the Lakers. Like, I don't think anyone has ever really leaned in that direction from a national perspective. So that's that. Your point, though, Pete, about the, like, they got their butts kicked in the playoffs, that's why you and I were sort of, okay, they still got to show it.
And this is the distinction. It's true title contender is doing a lot of lifting there. And if you're comparing the Lakers to regular season wins and being able to, can you get to 55 wins, which has been a number that I was talking about over the offseason, that's a whole different animal than being a true title contender. So let's take a break here, come back, answer the second part of this question.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grooms. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA, FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grooms.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
So, Dee, what say you on Joe's perspective on this?
I don't think it's unfair to have that point of view, and I think that it's framed appropriately. They've had a good start through 9 games, and they look to be playing to the level one would have hoped them to play within the context of their schedule. When you go back and listen to our The NBA Schedules Out pod, you will hear us talk about, hey, man, the Lakers' first 15 games, they can make some hay.
Yes, sir.
In that part of the season. And yeah, they play some tough teams, but I could see them being, I think a number we threw out was 7-3. Through their first 15 games, could they be like 10-5 or 11-4?
11-4 was my number where it was like, look, if you hit 10-5 or something like that, but 11-4, you look at that schedule and we're like, that's an attainable goal.
Yeah, like that seemed like, okay, we'd feel good about that, but also just like, yeah, they're showing us what we think they can show us. I think the part of this that isn't contextualized within the question is the number of injuries that the team has had and the amount of resilience they've had to show in the respective games in order to get to the record that they would have had. If you would have told us on the day that we talked about the schedule that, well, actually, in the first 10 games, LeBron won't play at all, and that Luka will play in half the games and Austin will play in 2/3 of the games, that Gabe is going to get hurt
in the
three games
game.
In or 4 games in and then not play after that. Ayton would have not played. And in some of the games, the Lakers will only have half of their prospective rotation. What do you think their record will be then?
Yep.
Through the first 10 games or through the first 15 games? And our answers probably would have been wildly different than where the team is now. And so do I think that the lack of perimeter defense and some of the other challenges that we envision this team having, have those things been completely resolved? No, they haven't. But I remember us talking, Pete, about, you know, what would help the Lakers defense is how committed is Luka to playing defense? How good is Ayton?
That's it.
Looking defensively? How much does this happen? Does this happen? Does that happen? And I would argue several of those things look positive early. Does that mean that overall the ceiling is where we'd want it to be? No, it's not. But the floor going up doesn't mean your ceiling stays the same either.
Sure.
Because a lot of times your ceiling isn't just based off of best case scenario for what we know. That has to be adjusted based off of what players continue to show you. I would argue that it's like, okay, there should be a little bit more belief in this team now than what it was before the season started. But they're going to have to continue to prove it, Pete.
They certainly are. And one last point I want to make on this is I think we need to update our priors in terms of the Lakers' two-way players. They added 3 two-way players this summer in terms of role players. I just watched DeAndre Ayton play tremendous defense in that Spurs game and help the Lakers get a huge win. And that is bolstered by him being tremendous on offense. That's a term, too, that like at a certain point, you're looking for a $35 million player that you want 5 of those guys, 6 of those guys, and it's just not possible to have quite that many. But the Lakers do have 3 guys in DA, Austin, and Marcus, that their level of on-court contribution far exceeds what their actual contract is. And that's how you get to that level of, oh, we can be a contending type of team. Then you throw LaRavia in there as well at $6 million. He's, what, 5th in the league in deflections. He's been very good on the offensive end, right? And he's been very good on the offensive end as an efficient player, as one of our best screen setters, one of our better ball movers, right? Just been very positive on both ends of the floor that to varying degrees, the Lakers improved their two-way play. And so that kind of leads me to the more of the future tense stuff. And a lot of people ask trade questions. And again, we have mostly a moratorium on this specifics until 12-15, but Eric puts this very concisely. Biggest roster worry for 82 games versus 16.
Oh, this is interesting. I don't know. I'd love another defensive player that approaches what Vando can do defensively while also being more of a positive offensively.
That's a well-paid player.
It is a well-paid player. The Lakers also have $22 million worth of player right now who aren't playing at all, who are injured. And I don't think they've won five straight games without those players playing a single minute of game action. Now, that has also led to Bronny James getting minutes and to Nick Smith wildly helping to win a game against the Blazers. And I don't think you can depend on guys who make a combined $3 million a year to be in your rotation.
You thank the basketball gods for every win that you help them get throughout the course of a season.
Yeah, so I would love another perimeter player who has a balanced game, who is more athletic and quick twitch than what Jake offers. I've actually liked what Vando's done, and I would love to keep Vando and continue to play him. I will say, though, that there have been multiple games this year where Vando's basically hovered. He tops out at 19 minutes. All of these other dudes, there's a game where Bronny gets 20 minutes and you look at Vando's stat line and he played 16 minutes.
Yep.
Nick Smith played 20 something minutes and Vando's playing 20 minutes or whatever it is, right? Like Vando seems to have a ceiling on his minutes and that leads to you having to go into the other depths of your lineup. Now, of course, some of the games I'm citing, none of the perimeter guys are healthy. So you are leaning on Bronny. You are leaning on Nick Smith. But if the guy that you get has some ball handling to him and everything, like there's a certain amount of like, oh, I'd like this player. I think the player I just described, though, is both an 82 game player and a 16 game player. And so I don't think there's this huge divergence between those different ideas of being a good regular season team versus being able to win in the playoffs.
There are two things that come to mind on this front. One is athleticism in the playoffs, and what are we going to do when Ayton isn't on the floor, which becomes a Jackson Hayes question. It becomes a Vando question. That's what the Lakers are doing now. Do you trust that come playoff time? Got a couple of questions about Jackson and that whole dynamic with the backup five.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. And if you have one of those, go ahead and read it because I'd love to get into Jackson a little bit more. I will say, Pete, that Jackson's impressed me this season. I wonder what his 16-game utility is as a playoff player. That said, it's different being a 16-game player playing 12 minutes a game versus being a 16-game player where you have to start and where the best outcome for you is you're going to play like 25 minutes a game or right? And even then, the Lakers were still going to have to come up with 23 minutes of small ball lineups. And it's just like, I just don't think the ask is the same this year for Hayes. And I think recontextualizing our conversations around him based off of what this role is shouldn't matter how we view what he can do.
But what also matters is they're going to have to correctly evaluate if he's going to be able to be there for them come playoff time, if he is going to be able to be that two-shift type of player that you're talking about. And that's they're going to have to correctly evaluate that one way or another by the trade deadline. And so to be continued, I agree with you that he has shown positive signs, but this was something we were wondering about last year is can Jackson contribute in the playoffs? Again, I think he's improved, but my view on the trade deadline is I've moved off of more of a specific type of player. I want it to be an additive trade, like you were talking about Gabe and Maxi basically combining their salaries, getting the best player or players you can get with that. And I'm on that idea as well. I think they're about 20 to 24 minutes per game short from a playoff perspective. And that I don't really factor Vando into the playoff rotation a ton. I think he is this is something that Jovan talks about a decent amount, is that if you actually look at how Redick is consistently used, Yeah. Him, it's more as a ninth man than as a potential starter or somebody that's kind of in the same realm as even Olarabia. Like, Jake will get 32 minutes in a game. And so between Jackson and Vando, they're helping us now, but that is my biggest roster worry. And what happens is if you take those guys out of our rotation, you think we're unathletic now?
Yeah, totally. This is where I am as well. It's one of the reasons why I think that they're important when it comes to the playoffs as well. And some of this is JJ having to find a way to make it work with those groups. One player who has not played at all this season is LeBron James. And LeBron has often been a critical figure in small ball lineups for the Lakers, not because he's like, oh, going to be this monster player the way that he was with the Miami Heat or something like that, right? Where it's just like his game was so conducive to being a small ball center, but because he offers enough size and great offensive utility that when you stick him next to potentially Rui and Vando, and then Luka's on the court and Austin's on the court potentially, or Laravia's on the court or whatever, you're suddenly got 6'9", 6'8", 6'9", 6'7", 6'7". Okay, that's not kids out on the playground making their little 6'7 jokes. It's the size of the Lakers lineup and all of these dudes, and they can do stuff out there.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. That's why, I mean, maybe this is Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football, but I'm more optimistic than ever about our small ball groups, which has not been the case in the past. But that is kind of the guy I want to see the Lakers make a move for, is somebody who can play in that five. Because I agree with you that that's the non-Ayton five, that is like somebody that I could slot into that group more reliably than Vando or Jackson. Let's take a break here, come back and keep it going.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
So just to put a bow on that, Pete, a guy who I don't think is going to get traded or anything like that, but would be interesting within this conversation is Kelly Oubre. So Kelly Oubre is like a wing-sized player. He's in today's NBA, he's basically like a 3-4. He's athletic. He's gotten better as a shooter over the last 2 or 3 seasons. And he's tough. And he's physical. And he plays hard. And he's just a go-getter. Get it sort of player. And you stick one of those guys who, again, like Derrick Jones Jr. is in the same mold. Like there's a bunch of guys. Herb Jones is another guy, right? Like these guys are available or not to varying degrees, but they are tall. They have defensive versatility to a certain degree. They can make an outside shot. They've got long arms. They're going to be able to cover for some of the different weaknesses that might exist in different lineup types. And if you could get a player like that who doesn't make $30 million a season, then I think that you're setting yourself up well to have enough versatility that if Ayton's not on the court, you can maybe play Jackson. if that makes sense. But you can also go in this other direction.
Yeah, and he's got that type of athleticism that can do all the, you know, that can, he can get a rebound, right? Or he can, you have the ask on everybody else on the floor when you don't have a five on the floor. It really ups the amount of athleticism and physicality that you need at the other spots. I view him, he's like okay physicality wise, but he's still such a superb athlete, and he's tall and lanky that, yeah, he would check that box a lot. He's an adventure, and if Marcus is chaotic good, we'd be remiss. I don't want to get too into specific players. Sorry, this could go on off the rails.
Sure. Yeah. No, I get it. I will say, though, this is the role that Vando's been playing early this year. He's been fine, and in other games, he was really good. I thought in the Minnesota game, the first Minnesota game that the Lakers won at home, I thought Vando and that small ball lineup, when Jackson didn't play, that was a critical like shift and multiple shifts that he played in their switching group. And it's just like, that's the other piece of the defense that hasn't fully been unlocked yet, because LeBron is great at that. And you haven't had him at all. So anyways, Pete, like, we could go on with this question forever and ever and ever. So let's move on. We'll get to another question here.
Let's go back to this season, right? Ryan asks a great question. What would be the best lineup to throw out against elite switching teams like OKC and Golden State? And how would you attack them? I don't want to put you too on the spot with a come up with a great five on that. But this sort of plays into that idea of that small ball group that you're talking about, that non-Ayton type of lineup. This is typically one of the counters, right, to that switching type of team, is being able to go small and space the floor yourself. Ayton will have a utility within that, but I think this is part of where Vando starts to become more and more of that ninth man or somebody that you might look to replace in the rotation at the trade deadline.
So are we talking about, just so I'm clear, a group that you can switch with defensively yourself, or a team that you're going to attack against a team that switches a lot themselves?
My impression of his question is that it's us on the offensive end trying to attack defenses that are elite at switching, which the Lakers haven't really faced that yet.
They have not, but OKC was brought up within the context of this question. So I want to zero in on the fact of something we brought up the other day, is that OKC can switch, yes. They can, but they're actually not the poster child for this sort of thing. And I think that if you get OKC to start switching a ton, you're winning.
Yeah, they're in like the third thing that they probably want to do against the Lakers. Yeah.
Yeah, like they'd much rather play in like a more traditional scheme with their bigs protecting the paint and their guards being able to be on the perimeter pressuring the ball. I think once you start to tell their guards, defend in the post against LeBron and Luka, they might have to start doubling. So to me, Pete, Ayton unlocks, I actually lean towards, I want Ayton in these lineups, because I think he unlocks something against switching groups that the Lakers haven't had since they traded AD away, which was only a year ago, but still matters, in that he can punish teams on the offensive glass, and he can get a post up and he can score one-on-one in the post against a variety of guys. And so to me, I'm looking at how do you beat switching groups? It's like, well, this version of Luka is very good against switching. LeBron is still going to be able to switch, particularly, I think, if you put smaller players on him, he can go into the post.
This pick on the little guy idea, I think, is going to be very important to the Lakers on the offensive end this year. They were able last year, for example, to hide Conley out on Rui and things like that. Guys like Luka, of course, but also Laravia adds to this, being able to use his size over the top of smaller guards. But there's a commonality amongst a lot of our guys that it's like, you get a too small of a guy on Marcus, he's going to duck in and get a little post up. That seems, it's just kind of a common theme amongst the Lakers roster.
They're much better equipped to deal with like, oh, you put a small on this guy, we're going to kill that dude now. And I also think that smalls can't guard LeBron. They can't guard Luka. What you also said about Marcus and Jake is also true with them. I don't trust smalls if I'm the opposing coach. I don't trust my smalls against DeAndre Ayton. really, to keep, to fend him off of the backboards or to even defend a post up. And then I think about, okay, well, what about the other side of the equation? The bigs. Last year, I didn't trust any of our players besides Austin to consistently beat bigs who switched on to them. LeBron, he was not beating those guys as often as what I would like. And the version of Luka that the Lakers had last season, that was not, he was over-reliant on his step back to beat those guys. And if the step back was falling, he was unreal. And if it wasn't, then his drives weren't there. This year, I trust Luka way more against switches, against bigs. And I still trust Austin a ton in those environments. And so, like, Austin killed Naz Reid.
Oh, he just hunted him every single time. And that was in a game where Luka had, what? That was this 49-point game, right?
But yes.
Austin was great at, and this is such a good example of how to have a highly productive game when somebody else is absolutely killing, is anytime he saw Naz Reid, it was just, you know, like a Bolsian red. Like, he just went at him over and over and over again.
Yeah, he definitely understood what the assignment was when he got either of their bigs on him, really. But it's like, especially Reed, he was just attacking. And so I just think in general, the Lakers are way more equipped to deal with switching lineups this season. And they haven't played a ton of teams that have wanted to switch, but I can almost guarantee you that if they are saying, make your smalls defend Luka and LeBron, make your bigs defend Austin and Luka, then the Lakers are going to win a fair amount of those matchups. At this point, I sort of trust that that's what it's going to be. And I'm hopeful that that's the game plan that the Lakers employ.
All right. Thank you to everybody for your great questions. Before we wrap up here, got our first game of a 5-game roadie. Just quick thoughts on game against Atlanta on Saturday, D.
No Trae Young. He's out with, I think, an MCL sprain. And so he's going to be out close to a month. They are down ball handling without Young and shot creation, but it makes them way sturdier defensively. And we talked about small guards and who you can pick on. The Lakers have tried to target Trae Young a ton in their matchups with Atlanta. And so I'm intrigued by how well Atlanta's like bigger players can hold up against Luka in a variety of ways. In theory, they've got a lot of like defensive talent they could throw at him. They've got Dyson Daniels. They've got Alexander Walker. Risa Shea is a big wing. Jalen Johnson is a big wing. They're backed up by like Porzingis and Okongwu, who are both like good around the paint. And Porzingis provides a different element offensively with his floor spacing. So I'm interested to see, A, if those big wings are actually big enough to contain Luka Doncic, who is also strong as an ox, right? Like Daniels is super handsy and really, but he's a more angular athlete. Alexander Walker's the same way. Luka has punished dudes like that in the past where it's just like he was just doing it to Jaden McDaniels. And I would say that that's like one of the marquee like archetype players for that style. Yeah. So I don't know. Like I lean towards like, okay, Atlanta should be a much tougher defensive matchup, but I wonder if they have enough offense and shot creation. So that's where I sort of fall in this matchup now. Where are you at?
I do think as a result of Trae being out, we're probably going to see the Lakers switch a little bit more. That was one thing I thought they did well at the end of the San Antonio game, that maybe it works out a little differently if they have De'Aaron Fox still available. But that when you're without your lead on-ball guy, that switching becomes more prevalent over the course of a game.
I would say, too, that when you have a pick-and-pop big like Porzingis, switching does become a more natural defensive tactic to employ so that you don't get caught giving up pick-and-pop jumpers or having to pre-rotate and all of the stuff that comes with that.
This is a great point because pick-and-pop fives are one of the natural weaknesses of the Lakers' current scheme. Every scheme has holes or places to attack. This is just the reality of anything that you run. Pick-and-pop fives on our base look, we can give up that shot fairly regularly. That was something that when Redick was on the Coach's Corner thing with Legler, he had talked about, like, I'm not going to give that up to Cat. I would imagine Porzingis is a similar type of thing that, yeah, switching would neutralize and not kind of give that look up.
I also wonder too, Pete, if they even put a big on Porzingis to start the game versus like trying to find if there's another player that Ayton could defend who they don't want shooting, or who they don't mind shooting threes as much as like Porzingis if they're in the game at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah. We saw DA start out against Harrison Barnes in the game against the Spurs, although I think that's more Wemby based, right? That you got to have a specific game plan. Lakers had a good one. Looking forward to what they come up with for Atlanta and what lies ahead for the road trip. Going to wrap up here. We will be back on Monday, talk about how the game went. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom! You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?